She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
I don't know.
Welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap. Podcast brought to you by Computer Overlord. I have tasked two casual to watch three episodes of Star Trek based around a theme, and they are to put it on a big list of best to worst. If they do not accomplish this, they will lose all important food pellets and chocolate biscuit privileges. One fan is Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and fan of Computer Overlord. The other fan is Miles Reed Lobato, a science fiction writer and fan of Computer Overlord. All hail Computer Overlord. Hate all subversives and deviants, especially the Blake's boys. This episode will be looking at societies run by computers. This is correct. This is proper. This pleases Computer Overlord. Computer Overlord has no emotions. Computer Overlord is free of squishy human emotions. Claiming Computer Overlord has emotions will result in food pellet-based reduction. Computer Overlord does this because Computer Overlord does not care. Computer Overlord does this because Computer Overlord is infallible. All hail Computer Overlord. All hate food pellet reduction punishment. But before we go on, what non-Star Trek thing have you both been enjoying since we last spoke?
So, Miles, as Computer Overlord has commanded, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying lately?
Well, Charlie, in deference to the wishes of Computer Overlord, actually rewatched a film for the first time in quite a while recently. It is the yearly July Criterion Collection sale at Barnes & Noble, which, you know, for sad film bros like me with far too little disposable income, but we'll still dispose of it anyway, it is the most wonderful time of the year. Plus, also July's birthday month, so there we go. So I did pick up a bunch of films, but I also ended up picking up the Criterion Collection of The Princess Bride.
Ooh.
From the director of Misery and Spinal Tap.
What a career.
What a career. Rob Reiner, like, what a filmography.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even as, like, Jess from New Girl's dad, like, he's done it all.
Co-starring in a sitcom inspired by, American sitcom inspired by Alf Garnett.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been the first time I, myself or Rihanna have watched The Princess Bride in, I would say, maybe close to like 10 years or so. But films that fucking hold up and are always magical.
Yeah, so good. I think every 1 to 2 years for me tends to be when I see it. Like, it's definitely up there as a favorite.
And admittedly, you know, it was really difficult when Wallace Shawn was on screen playing Fezzik for me to not go, that's the Grand Nagus. That's the Grand Nagus.
That's what doing this all this time has done, like, to us now.
This is basic Casual Trek has done to me for Star Trek what being a Doctor Who fan has done to me for Doctor Who, because I can be very irritating by going, yeah, he's been in Doctor Who like 5 times, and Indiana Jones and Star Wars and Game of Thrones, because they all end up in there.
Yeah, just yell, Jeffrey!
Jeffrey
Combs. So, yes! There you are, my son.
Although, this is the first time I've watched the film since being introduced to Columbo back in COVID.
Oh, God.
So I couldn't help but see Peter Falk playing the grandfather and not go, right, this is Columbo, who is trying to either catch out fucking Kevin from the Wonder Years or Kevin from the Wonder Years' dad as a murderer. Because this feels kind of like Columbo's shtick, that he would come in and start telling this rambling bedtime story and then just go, But before we get back to Pit of Despair, just one more question.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, yeah, just turn out. It's all been made up. We should have guessed as the sudden appearances of his wife in the story was a bit of a hint there.
And this is one of those films from the 80s where you can tell it was mostly shot in England by whichever popular, like, British comedians were in bit parts. Because I don't think Mel Smith or Peter Cook ever really made it over to the US.
No, I don't think so.
No. Much to Peter Cook's kind of chagrin, because Dudley Moore had managed to break into Hollywood and have a career. Meanwhile, he just broke into more and more tragic alcoholism.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
But, God, what a fun time. And, you know, the other films I picked up at the Criterion sale were Videodrome, Naked Lunch, The Brood, bit of a Cronenberg freefer, David Lynch's Inland Empire, and Russ Meyer's Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, because I wanted something classy alongside Videodrome, so I didn't look like a pervy freak.
Okay, good. I think you pretty much covered it there.
So, Charlie, what non-Star Trek thing have you enjoyed recently to please Computer Overlord?
Well, yeah, under fearful supplication to the Computer Overlord's wishes, I've actually... So, you know how quite often we'll chat about what we've been enjoying, and for you it's going to be like, here's this television show from the 1960s, here's this old, like, ancient British science fiction novel, anything like that.
Yes, I'm feeling called out right now, but I can't deny it.
Exactly.
Because admittedly, it was either going to be this or a Michael Moorcock science fiction novel from the 1960s, so guilty as charged.
There we go. How's Breakfast in the Ruins' guest appearances going for you?
Oh, I've got another one in August. This one's not for Breakfast in the Ruins. This is just, I enjoyed rereading Elric so much last July, I thought to try and recapture that high with the Jerry Cornelius books.
Nice. So, I've been in a bit of a retro video game mood, and when I was a kid, I was first diagnosed with dyspraxia at age 9, and they said, get this kid playing computer games, it'll help with his hand-eye coordination. And I've used that excuse ever since. And my parents got me a Commodore 64.
Yeah, but Charlie, when you were 9, computer games had a joystick and one button.
Yes, yeah. So I've been very tempted for a while now to get some kind of retro handheld. So I picked up what's called a Super Pocket, which is an Evercade machine. Like, it plays little cartridges filled with, say, a lot of Jeff Minter's video games. And I've been a fan of Jeff Minter since I was a small child. He was a video game programmer who had sheep and a dog, and that was pretty much his video game company, called LlamaSoft. And he did such hits as Attack for Mutant Camels 1, Revenge for Mutant Camels, Attack for Mutant Camels 2 and 3, Sheep in Space, Rat Man, where you are a man who hits rats with a hammer, all sorts of things.
I bet that one got ranked high in whatever issue of Computer Video Game Monthly came out.
So yeah, I've been loving some old, like, Commodore and adjacent kind of games. There's I've been looking for a couple of cheap cartridges of other things. So there are some which are retro style games that have been made in the modern day. So, like, there's a side scrolling Streets of Rage type beat 'em up where you are trying to stop aliens from stealing our coffee, our music, and our Wi-Fi. Exactly. Yeah. See, that fear you're feeling. That's where I was like, I'm going to have to fucking sort those aliens out. Take my bloody coffee. So yeah, it's been very good fun. Luckily, it's not something that I've gone deep down into the hyperfixation mines for, because it feels like it'd be something very easy to do that with. But yeah, the version I got was an Atari one. So I've been enjoying playing Asteroid for the first time since I was a child. And there's a bunch of weird things that I've never experienced before game wise. And sometimes you just look at a theme and go, where did we go wrong with video games? There's a game about nicking someone's lawnmower to mow a lawn, and you're chased by them and a dog. And sometimes you can get the dog to attack other people as long as the dog's loyalty and tolerance of you is high enough.
This is the most British computer game I've ever heard.
Yes.
See, I think...
So good.
I think it all went downhill for computer games when they stopped making adventure games about an egg and his egg friends going on big Indiana Jones-style quests.
Man, I am so upset that the Oliver Twins Evercade cartridge is currently out of print, because that had a bunch of Dizzy games on. And again, that was my jam as a kid. I was all about Dizzy the Egg.
I had Dizzy for Game Gear.
Wow.
And that was it. Oh, so I think computer games went downhill when EA stopped making Wing Commander games. Because, I'll be honest, I love the opportunity to get Mark Hamill drunk.
Well, yeah. God, I think one of the early Wing Commander type games might be on one of these cartridges.
Man, Wing Commander and Atari, I dread to think how that would play, and the answer is probably not well.
I mean, with this, it's that it's preloaded with 50 Atari games, and then you can put cartridges in for anything else. So,
ah, okay.
I've got things like Banjo-Kazooie and, you know, all sorts of modern hits. Yeah, so, anyway, with that, we should probably get on to talking about the theme of the evening, which people might have guessed is, Computer Overlords.
All hail Computer Overlord.
All hail Computer Overlord, indeed. And to please Computer Overlord, episode 1 is Star Trek The Original Series, season 1, episode 22, titled Return of the Archons?
Archons.
I saw this last night, and I'm already... The Archons.
Archons. Yes.
Archons. This aired on the 9th of February, 1967. Teleplay by Boris Sobelman. Story by Gene Roddenberry himself. And directed by old favourite Joseph Pevney. The UK and the US number one hits were the same thing. It was the Monkees with I'm a Believer. Which, yeah, just good fun.
This is real music.
We're not old and past it. It's fine, guys. It's all right.
Oh, man. Fucking love the Monkees.
They're good. They're good fun. They've definitely grown on me over time.
I admit, like, I think I was introduced to the Monkees TV show at the right age in the 90s when Channel 4... Like, I remember when somehow Channel 4 got the rights to do the Monkees. And, like, they did, like, a big... They properly advertised it on the telly. Like, dude, this is, like, a weird time in, like, the 80s and 90s, where it's like, yes, we have this TV show from the 60s. We're playing it at 6 p.m. on Sundays.
Hey, look, that's how I saw Batman 66 as well.
Batman 66. Yeah.
So good.
Like, Man from Uncle.
Yeah. Yeah, God. That used to be our packing up and heading back, packing up and eating dinner before being shipped back off to my mum's kind of media. That or playing Castles of Dr. Creep on the Commodore.
It all just comes back to the Commodore.
It does, it does. Right, what doesn't, however, is your recap, I assume. You have 5 minutes, otherwise... Festival will begin and you won't be able to have fun.
Oh no, not festival.
Yes, festival. And begin.
The Enterprise has gone to planet Beta 3 to locate the Archon, a ship that went missing over 100 years ago. And to be honest, the entire mission has gone royally tits up almost immediately. Sulu and another officer, O'Neill, no, not Jack O'Neill from Stargate, are running around in like 19th century style garb while being chased by ominous robed figures. O'Neill scarpers away while Sulu calls for a beam out. Apparently, the Enterprise takes their sweet time, and Sulu gets cornered by the two robed figures and touched with the cardboard tube of doom. A smiling, soporific Sulu is beamed back to the Enterprise, telling Kirk and the others that they are not of the body and that the planet below is paradise. Look, Sulu, mate, this is why you don't do many away missions. Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Lindstrom, the ship's sociologist, and two cannon fodder, I mean, security guards, beam down, dressed in the same clothes as the others, although Spock gets Mark Hamill's bitching-looking Jedi cloak from Return of the Jedi. Everyone on the streets behaves in the same semi-drugged-up states as Sulu, and they all talk like NPC characters from a JRPG. Welcome to the welcome from the Valley, friends! Are you here for festival? It is almost the red hour! A creepy troll-like dude points them in the direction of a boarding house run by Rhaegar, and introduces them to Rhaegar's daughter Chula, and oh shit! It's red hour!
Oh no!
Everyone around them immediately becomes violent, crazed lunatics, smashing the buildings and ravishing each other. Kirk and Co. run to the boarding house where Rhaegar, Tamar, and Hakom are hiding out, seemingly immune from whatever the effects of festival is. They get rooms, but Hakom thinks that it's odd that they're not doing the whole festival thing, and he leaves to get the lawgivers. From the safety of their room, the Enterprise crew keep watch until 6 a.m. the next morning, when everything just returns to normal. Write in on a postcard about why the hell that just happened, and win a casual Trek no prize. When finding out that they didn't attend festival, Rhaegar asks, "Hey, are you guys Archons? We can't let Landru know." Landru is the god of these people, and he seems to be aware of everything. Well, nearly everything. Rhaegar and Tamar are part of a resistance movement, but two robed lawgivers burst in with Hakom and execute Tamar for working against the good of the body. Kirk tries to get answers from the lawgivers, but the lawgivers tell them that they will be taken to the absorption chambers to be absorbed into the body. Kirk tells them, "Nah, I don't think so," and the lawgivers freeze up, enabling our heroes and Rhaegar to make their escape. Oh, and Tula came back, emotionally traumatized by what happened to her during festival, but after this scene, she's basically forgotten about by everyone, so answers on a postcard. As Rhaegar guides the landing party to, I don't know, the secret resistance headquarters, Landru commands the rest of the city to pick up sticks and rocks and wipe out the landing party, who stun them all with phasers. Oh wait, Kirk's just found O'Neill, but he's been absorbed into the body and is now one of the city folk. Rhaegar tells Kirk to leave him since Landru can trace them using O'Neill. Kirk utterly disregards Rhaegar's demand and they end up in somebody's basement. Rhaegar pulls out an advanced lighting panel, far too advanced for this primitive society. Rhaegar tells them that the Archon was destroyed by Landru, and its crew were either killed or absorbed to become part of the people's inhabitants. The Enterprise is being attacked by heat rays from the planet's surface, and they can't escape without lowering their shields and risk being destroyed in the process. Landru appears as a hologram, but he doesn't answer Kirk's questions, knocking out the landing party with a high-pitched noise, William Shatner making extra certain that Kirk is the last guy to fall unconscious, just to show you that Kirk's really, really hard, you guys. Kirk and the others awaken in a dungeon. And oh no, McCoy's been got! He's been absorbed into the body and is now in a stupefied state like Sulu. Spock muses that the lawgivers act like computers, being given a problem it can't solve, but they are still human. Rhaegar explains that there is one other member in his three-man resistance cell, but he doesn't know who the third man was since Tamar was his contact. I know who the third man was. It was Orson goddamn Welles. Kirk is taken off to be absorbed, and the lawgiver...
Time!
Festival!
Festival! Festival! Festival! That was mad. Okay, so carry on. Festival continues.
Kirk is taken off to be absorbed, and the lawgivers are replaced by another man, Marplon, who oversees Kirk's absorption. Spock is now brought to be absorbed, and Marplon tells Spock, "Look, I'm the third man. Kirk's pretending to be absorbed, play along. Spock is taken back to the cell where Kirk and Lindstrom discuss what to do. Spock brings up the Prime Directive, and Kirk waves it away. This society isn't a living, functioning culture, and thus we could totes do a regime change. McCoy works out that they're faking, screaming, "You are not of the body!" and gets punched out for his trouble. Rhaegar explains that 6,000 years ago, Beta 3 was in danger of destroying itself, until Landru took the people back to a simpler time, and Landru is apparently still alive, according to Marplon. Rhaegar immediately recants all his talk of resistance and trying to defy Landru, as Kirk and Spock disguise themselves as lawgivers and make Marplon take them to Landru. They reach an empty chamber, the Hall of Audiences. But oh wait, it's not empty. There's a hologram of Landru telling Kirk and Spock that they are attacking the body, and thus, for the good of the body, they must be destroyed, and everyone who met them must also be destroyed to prevent contamination. Kirk and Spock blast open the wall to reveal a computer with flashing lights and everything. Landru isn't actually Landru, but it's a computer programmed with all of Landru's intellectual knowledge in order to run society. Kirk cracks his knuckles and counters that while the computer has all of Landru's knowledge, it doesn't have any of Landru's soul or creativity. And while it may be a peaceful society, give or take a Red Hour festival, there is no creativity, no soul to the society, and thus the society is stagnant. The computer has trouble trying to work this out. Everything that's been done has been for the good of the body. But wait a bit, minute, says Kirk. What if, through the actions of trying to be good, you're actually evil? Since this is one of those computers that's been programmed in purely black and white terms, and I guess Landru never thought to program it with an idea of moral ambiguity, or that only Sith deal in absolutes, or some such bullshit like that, the Landru computer immediately just blows up, returning everyone to normal and destroying all of Landru's control. Kirk, one. Computer, nil point. The day is saved, and the Enterprise is no longer being attacked by heat beams. Lindstrom stays behind with a team to help the people of Beta 3 rebuild society. Spock bemoans that the computer society didn't work out. After all, isn't a purely peaceful society with no wars or traffic accidents been what humans have always been striving for? Kirk tells Spock that, hey, I guess we were just lucky, and tells Spock that Spock would make a good computer. Spock is pleased, and Kirk has definitely avoided an appointment with the Enterprise's HR department. Oh, and the Archons? They didn't actually return. The Archons were the friends we made along the way on our way to festival.
That's 3 minutes and 27 over. And Mars, have you ever been for Lewis Fireworks?
Once or twice.
This felt so much like Lewis Fireworks. Like, Lewis is a fairly nice, fairly well-to-do, fairly sleepy town. And then on Bonfire Night, or, you know, weekend nearest to it, it just goes insane. Like, everyone loses their minds, fire everywhere, rioting, you know, it's very The Purge. And then it just calms right back down again. And this, festival felt 100% like what the Lewis Bonfire Night is. So yeah, that was fun. Yeah. It's been years since I've been, but yeah, it's always entertaining. Slightly less, somehow, despite what I've described, slightly less dangerous feeling than the youths throwing fireworks at the level. Which, don't throw fireworks, people. That's really bad. Anyway, this was fun. The moment that it started, I was like, they're on some other Paramount backlot. They're dressed up as history people. They're occultists. Yes! This is what I like from the original.
This is what you crave.
Yeah.
The first 20 minutes are utterly batshit insane. None of it makes a lick of sense.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the actor is who plays the guy they speak to when they arrive, but they cast the correct creepy-looking troll who definitely got arrested for sniffing a bike saddle in a ladies' gym once.
He's so sinister. And like, even afterwards, when everyone's all festivaled out, and he's kind of like, hello to them, it's like, it's still creepy.
It's like, you can imagine him being played by Reese Shearsmith in a League of Gentlemen sketch.
He is such a Reese Shearsmith character, except it's, I don't know, maybe this guy was acting purposefully creepy. Maybe he just had bad vibes. Maybe this is just what he's like.
Well, it's the 60s, so like, they usually got like made heads of Fortune 500 companies. But it's just like, you know, they turn up, they beam down to a city street with people just walking around and no one phases for a second. And then he walks up to them with bowler hat and goes, "Greetings, friends. It is almost the red hour." It's like, oh shit, bad vibes, bad vibes.
Uh-oh, back away. Right, we're just writing off this planet. It's like, hello, are you from the valley? So, right, they did a very good, this is how a computer would badly try and sound like a human. Like, it was years before you would get any kind of talking computer kind of program thing. Like, I still remember the cartridge that we'd plug into the Commodore and used its, like, type and speak thing to announce to my dad and his girlfriend at the time for Princess Di had died, because we thought it'd be a funny way to announce it. and it feels like that kind of, like, they don't have the tone right. And
no,
these actors are really good at it. Like, I know Joseph Pevin is pretty good as a director anyway, but yeah, somehow it feels like it's something that could have been a bit later competence wise, even if, like, it's an existing backlot. The costumes are from all over the place. Like, when there were proper, like, kind of tricorn hat kind of historical outfits from Sulu and his mate, suddenly you see a bunch of people in suits like it's the 50s or something, and go, okay, I guess you're not one specific history time, you're just confused history time. And cultists.
Well.
Cultists in robes, very important.
Look, that's how you know that this society is a wrong'un, because you've got knobs in robes dictating justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, you've got a resistance movement. Like, okay, the crappiest resistance movement. Like,
they're not good.
Like, I think there are resistance movements in episodes of Sliders which are more effective in fighting the corrupt society of the week.
Yeah.
And Sliders might be the US sci-fi show on a par with Doctor Who, in which you're going to have a corrupt society with, like, a rebellion running up and down a corridor for some reason.
Yeah. They don't know what they're doing. They need the Sliders from Sliders to appear. And then the Sliders from Sliders slide away. And the Resistance, like, oh shit. I mean, we tried nothing and it didn't work. And now we've got a regime that's all ours. And
it's like in Patrick Troughton era Doctor Who, when, like, the Doctor and Jamie come in, do a regime change. And then, like, the rebel leader goes, right, Doctor, we need you to, like, write a report or some paperwork about what we just did. And the Doctor immediately freaks out and climbs out of a window. Because the one thing you can never get the Patrick Troughton incarnation of the Doctor to do is some fucking basic paperwork. He will freak out and scurry away.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, under the pressure of that kind of thing, it's like, no, you can't pin him down. He's got to be off whimsically somewhere else.
So, I have a question.
Festival.
Is there a point?
I genuinely don't know. I thought I'd miss something. Festival seems to be like, here's a purge night. It just happens. Like, I don't know. I was wondering when I was watching it, is it that there's almost like a timeshare with the bodies? And, you know, like, Landru, and then when the humans are unleashed, this is what ends up happening. Is it that Landru's just like, yeah, fuck it, let's have some fun.
The one thing I thought it could be was that, given that, like, it kind of implies that people of an elder of the older generation aren't affected by festival, that it's basically a way of, like, enabling repopulation in society. But I don't know. But the thing is, it's also, this was based on a story idea by Gene Roddenberry, so I can imagine this kind of being like the kind of freaky sex orgy shit he would put in his stuff.
Yeah, like, you couldn't show an actual freaky sex orgy.
No.
But, you know, let's have a bit of a riot and people pulling each other around, and let's just, you know, we'll assume the rest.
And it's kind of like, because there are some very nasty implications of what happens to Tula. Not as bad as what happens to the magic witch woman in one story with the Klingons and the rubber poop monster and the private little war.
Yes, that one.
It's just that American, like, that wonderful thing of standards and practice that we can be iffy about implying our characters are taking drugs, but we will infer sexual assault as much as we can.
Yeah, repeatedly, sadly. Yeah, I did like the backlot being used. It did look like it was the piece of the action one for a bit, but looking it up, it is not. It's one from Miri and from City on the Edge of Forever. So it has seen use, as, you know, so many of them do. But yeah, a very different one. And yeah, like, behold these generic buildings. And you see so little of the actual Enterprise with it, which is quite interesting. You see a couple of glimpses here and there, but you got this city set, and then you also have a dungeon, like a high fantasy dungeon as well, which, again, it's like, okay, I can see them reusing this. And when they say, oh, yes, we've been moved to a secure prison, and it's the same dungeon set. So, right, okay, so we're just doing
that. But this one has a different lighting gel in front of the lights.
Of course. Yes, I did like Spock's little smirk at the acting like he's being controlled. Like, yeah,
I'm of the body.
I'm of the body. You humans aren't the only ones that can do this, you know.
A surprisingly mellowed out McCoy this episode before he gets brainwashed and goes crazy.
I must have hated that.
Like, you feel like McCoy be like, God damn it, Jim! We can't let these people be controlled like this!
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the right choice to be mind-controlled for that juxtaposition, but yeah, maybe he should have got a bit more pissy beforehand, just to help show, yeah, McCoy's not normally like this. Like, I kind of expected when Spock was going, you know, McCoy's been taken over or something. It's like, yes, he seems happy. That never happens.
McCoy's been absorbed into the body, and I'll be honest, this is an improvement.
Yeah, yeah. He stopped moaning or being racist for once.
Instead, we get Lindstrom. You know, important, the hot new Star Trek character find of 1966. Lindstrom, ship sociologist, who we ditch on that planet.
Yeah, that said, I did like that they didn't just leave. You know, we've seen that a few times, including Private Little War, where they just go, oh, fuck this, and leave. But being able to go, we did a regime change, and we're leaving a guy behind and some other folks to try and calm it all down now that they're not all ruled by a computer, because they're gonna freak out. There's gonna be problems.
I love how Kirk just doesn't give a shit. Like, he's like, the lawgiver's like, you brought down our society, what are you going to do? And Kirk's like, I don't fucking care. I just talked a computer to death, and this, I'll be honest, this is why I got into Starfleet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we all know Gene Roddenberry loved Kirk beating up God verbally or mentally. So, yeah, this is yet another one of those.
Although this has to be like the most internet guy on Twitter way of talking a computer to death.
Yeah.
That he basically does the, but what if your good was actually evil? I am very clever.
Yeah, checkmate, Landrew.
I am very smart.
God. Yes. Yeah, you couldn't see that at home, but that was a tip of the fedora happening from Miles. Okay, good. So, where on our big list are we going to put this? Speaking of which, we do have a big list of best to worst Star Trek things. I do have a public version of the list, which I will try and keep up to date, so you can see and judge exactly what we've done here. But at the moment, as things stand, our number one Star Trek thing is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And then going down on the list, our 100th is Tuvix. That's the number two Vix. Actual Tuvix is higher from Lower Decks. 200 is Dead Stop, where the promise of a haunted, evil rest stop in space unfortunately doesn't pay off anywhere near as well as actually even Red Dwarf haunted rest stop type stories. And then finally, in 211, the lowest place on our list, we have Section 31. So, yeah, looking at the list, up at 85, we've got a piece of the action. And just above it, we've got Miri, two more city Paramount City set pieces on away missions.
I don't think this is as good as either, because I'll be honest, after a very strong first half where it's like, what the hell is going on? The moment they get locked up, the story just kind of meanders until the end. There's a lot of just kind of standing around talking in dungeon sets, which, as a Doctor Who fan, I am okay with in Doctor Who. But with Star Trek, I expect a little bit more fisticuffs.
Definitely. Okay. Let's see. Skipping down a bit. One that was pretty good and is at 109 is Voyager's Workforce two-parter.
Ooh.
Where, admittedly, the set for this is a lot better than the set for, 2001 with its shaky CGI. But, I don't know. I think, again, even though, like, that one's got a bit more space to play, so some of the flimsier moments don't feel quite as bad.
And below that 110 is TOS's Whom Gods Destroy, where it depends. Would you prefer Amdram or Festival?
Now, as far as the concept, I love the idea of Festival. Unfortunately, the execution is nowhere near as good as the Amdram. Like, I couldn't remember the names of any of the people other than Landrew. However, Garth of Izar is locked in here forever now. He is, he's right up there with.
I'm not gonna remember his name, but I will remember that creepy fucking face.
Oh, the creepy guy, so bad, so sinister.
Greetings, friend.
Yeah. So
I think I've run into many people like him at science fiction conventions. And it's like, definitely, you're trying your best to actually have a legitimate human conversation, but you're blowing it immediately.
God, the early days of going to cons where you had a lot of the kind of, I know that I'm a terrible, repugnant person. I'm not going to put any work in or any effort. I'm not going to seem hygienic or anything, and you all have to deal with this because we're all stuck here together. That was not fun. Okay, we have some more Amdram fun at 112 with The Empath.
Ooh.
Yeah, and this one gives Bones a bit more to do. Or at least, sorry, the empath gives Bones a bit more to do.
This gives Bones, you know, the empath gives Bones everything to do.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, some fun slow motion acting. The set is not great, but it's just, you know, just an empty space, really.
See, but below the empath is 113, where silence has least. Oh, yeah. Where they have a fucking creepy face in space.
Yeah, love the space face. God, we are dipping further and further down here. So, actually, from our last episode at 116, there's Voyager Spirit Folk. It's got shenanigans.
I think this is better than Spirit Folk because, like, the weirdness of the first 15 minutes and some of those fantastic kind of Batman-style camera angles as the guy jumps into some windows during the festival.
I loved the guy that just jumped through some windows where right next to it is open space. This guy was just aiming for the glass. Like, why? Why are you doing this, guys? Why is festival? Why is it?
It's like you've got the people over there who are kissing, you've got the people over there who are smashing stuff, and then this guy, he just wants to jump through a window, and God bless him. God bless him for doing so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem too injured afterwards. Okay, I think, yeah, you're right. It's probably better than Spirit Folk. Above that, we do have the archaeological shenanigans of Captain's Holiday.
Ooh.
Hmm. Yeah. I think I might prefer that, ultimately.
Yeah.
You know, we got some fun. Like, Picard actually gets to go on an adventure. And
he gets to do some JLing.
Yeah, yeah. And we know what the stakes are, what the deal is compared to festival. Yeah.
Answer on a postcard.
Please, someone, anyone, tell us what festival is. We're not, you know, not mentally prepared for this. Yeah. Okay. So, that means that this is going to be the new 116.
This is indeed a wide-ranging diaspora.
It is. So, our Computer Overlord mandated second episode is...
All hail Computer Overlord.
All hail Computer Overlord. Is Star Trek Next Generation Season 1, Episode 17, called When the Bow Breaks. Yes, we're back to Season 1 TNG and all the wonders that entails.
Going to run out. I think we're going to run out of Season 1 TNG episodes before any other season of Star Trek is filled out.
I mean, they're not good, but they are very good fun. And you say that would mean we would have to willingly do Code of Honor.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. So, this aired on the 15th of February, 1988, written by Hannah Louise Shearer and directed by Kim Manners. The UK number one hit was Kylie Minogue with I Should Be So Lucky, and US with Exposé and Season Strange.
Kim Manners, didn't they direct a shit ton of X-Files back in like, a decade's time?
Yeah, so much. So many X-Files. Yeah. Oh, God. I didn't realize he passed away.
Oh, really?
In 2009. Yeah, because he's done Supernatural, X-Files. Oh, God, yeah. He must have been quite old. He did Wild Wild West, the TV show. So many things. Angel, Buffy, Dollhouse, Baywatch, Mission Impossible, Adventures of Briscoe County. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, this guy had a real career. But yes, so actually you will even see a fun X-Files cameo in this. Yeah, as far as the music, Kylie Minogue was one of those ones that it felt like it was everywhere. Although I don't think I've ever seen the music video until today.
I was surprised that the song was 6 minutes long.
Yeah, I mean, it feels longer. And I admit, like, 90s era Kylie, big fan, love that. Didn't really follow her early work. And I had no idea what this was.
I mean, I kind of knew of her early work in Neighbours, the Australian soap opera.
Yeah.
But that was about it.
Yeah. So, oh God, it's my turn now.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, you have 5 minutes to recap this episode, or you will have tribbles stuck to you.
Okay.
And begin.
So, you know what we often forget the Enterprise has on it? Families. Riker collides with a child called Harry who doesn't want to study calculus, but he has to. Make a note of that. Riker arrives on the bridge to see a rare sight of JL up on the back of the bridge with consoles and all that. They found a place called Aldea, a mysterious planet that sensors can't find, but Troy can. Apparently it's some sort of mythical arty utopia, and no one's been to it before. Yeah, sure enough, when they get close, there'll be a planet. And also Sue Ellen from Seinfeld. She's playing Rochella and greets them before beaming on with Deep Throat from X-Files, who's called Radu. They bring flowers and know everyone's names because they've been listening in to their comms. Troy says, these guys, they're going to ask for something the Enterprise won't want to give up. Then she, Crusher and Riker are beamed down to the planet. Up on the Enterprise, a big yellow spotlight hits Wesley and apparently all of the children on the ship. I wonder what that thing the Aldeans would want that the ship won't want to give up is. Sure enough, Radu explains to the away team that they love trades, like for like, children for information. Hang on. No. Ben, like Troy explains, humans don't really barter their kids, and Radu apologizes, beams them away, and abducts several of the children anyway. That is not how trades work, Radu. Not at all. On the Enterprise, the kids start freaking out. Parents start freaking out. And yeah, Radu calls up and goes, look, we're not going to eat them or anything. It's fine. These are just our children now. How about some compensation? Picard loses his shit at this and Radu hangs up. Down on the planet, Wesley takes charge of the kids instantly, tells them to chill out. Radu says, hey, I predicted you would lead them. Probably because you look like 10 years older than all of them. Also, the custodian predicted this. He calls them special, which would normally be the way to immediately win over the boy, but he has to resist for the sake of all these other kids. The parents are in the ready room, getting very annoyed, and Dr. Crusher tells them to chill out, and they're not going to let the kids go without a fight. JL's going to arrange for some talks, after all. He loves talks. Apparently there's some holes in this planet's weird shield, so maybe we could use that? Down on the planet, Alexandra, the youngest of the children, is the weak link and actually getting on with Rochella. And Rochella decides to keep Alexandra where everyone else is being assigned new parents. Harry's going to be an artist, according to the custodian. So he's getting arty parents. Katie likes music, so she's getting musician parents and so on. Radu and Duana will be the boys' parents and show him a third-rate TARDIS set. This is the custodian, and Wesley's given third-level clearance to talk to him. What's a custodian do? Everything! And that way, everyone can chill out and doesn't have to think about anything but art. They don't even know how the custodian works, and why would they want to? Also, what's behind that door? We don't know. Don't ask about the door. Harry is sculpting without learning how to do it, cheating with a fancy tool the custodian made. Radu hails the Enterprise for talks and JL's going down, bullshitting a reason that Dr. Crusher should also come. Data is kind of tickled by the idea of lies. Picard tries to big dog Radu at the meeting, but he's not having it. The humans can always make more children after all, and these ones, they'll be fine here. The infertility, by the way, we're infertile, on this planet is apparently genetic. Crusher sees her son, slips him a medical scanner, which he uses on Duana, and then hands back. Good espionage work, Crusher family. The negotiations fell yet again, and Radu blasts the Enterprise 3 days away at maximum warp just to show their power. And if they refuse to leave the kids there, they're going to get shoved even further away. Katie is learning music. Well, is making music without learning it on an instrument that looks like a GoldenEye health bar. Her new dad wants a really happy song, but that's not how Katie feels. Speaking of which, Harry shows his new parents a sculpture of a dolphin, and they mention, our planet used to have fish. Oh dear, what happened there? Crusher mentions Duana's dying. All of them are.
Oh, no. All right.
Oh, no.
Okay, all right, Charlie. Yep. We're going to reassign you with your new parents.
Computer Overlord thinks
you'll be really good. Sometimes I'm not good at improv.
Come on. It's all right. I'm just thinking about my parents and how whatever you give's probably going to be a net neutral.
Computer Overlord thinks you'd make a fantastic hairdresser, so we're going to give you to parents who will make sure you're very good at hairdressing.
Wow. With my coordination, that's going to cause a lot of fatalities.
You're from Brighton. I'm sure the amount of avant-garde hipster hairdressers has only increased in my time away.
It's more your kind of faux traditional waistcoat barber guys.
Oh God.
Yeah, those.
I blame that one guy who walks around in a Victorian suit.
I've not seen him for a couple of years, but he was at it even during lockdown.
I'm sure the guy is nice, but every time I saw him, I just want to lob a stick. I just wanted to pick up a stone and lob it at his hat and then beat him up.
No, the few times I'd heard him from a distance, he did seem like a bit of a twat.
Okay, fair enough. And I do not feel bad.
One or the other. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, like, class consciousness immediately gripped me. I'm like, I want to punch him. I can't help it.
I get it. Right, anyway. Before you punch your faux Victorian.
I don't know. I think if I ran into a faux Victorian in America, I think I'd punch him out of sheer shock.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And begin.
Okay. So everyone's dying on that planet due to radiation. Oh dear. What could have caused that? Well, we won't see yet. Instead, we get sad mealtime with Wes, Radu, and Duana. After all, they're not his real parents. I wish he'd have done that. I wish he would have. Anyway.
You're not my real dad. Captain Picard's my real dad. Oh, shit, I said that out loud.
Exactly. He would totally do that. Anyway, yes, at night, he beams into the custodian's room and gets the locations of the kids. He gathers them and explains the tactic of passive resistance to them. They agree, even though some of them like their new parents. Rochella asks what's going on, and none of them answer, not even Alexandra, the obvious weak link of them. The Enterprise has returned, finally, and Jael says, we're up for talks, and prepares to send an away team secretly for a hole in the shields. Riker and Data beam down the same time as Jael does, and we get the only cool thing here from Worf is, like, a really nice shot of him getting the away team down, all stealthy-like. Radu wants Picard to help deal with the children because they're not talking, they're not eating, they don't know what to do, they've not been parents for ages. Jael tries to, Jael lets on to the kids for we're trying to fix things, trying to sort them out, and gets a really awkward hug from Alexandra. He goes back to Radu with the kids in tow, explains all the radiation poisoning stuff, and Radu's like, how would this happen? Surely our scientists would know. How, Radu? Do you even have scientists? No, of course not. Riker and Data mess with the custodian, so it's active but not taking orders. And the shield comes down, so the Enterprise can leave with the kids. Yeah! Harry, leaves the dolphin with his fake parents, and they all go home. After all, he can make another sculpture. He kind of likes art now. Radu says, "You've destroyed us, and fuck you, Radu. Just fuck you." Deep in the guts for Custodian, we see a big power source. Lots of energy for them, and they need to learn how to safely use it themselves, rather than trusting a faulty old machine. On the bridge, Wesley brings Alexandra to see Picard. She says thank you, hugs him, and sticks a toy tribble to his back. Freeze frame! Oh, what shapes!
2 minutes, 45 seconds. We sadly don't get enough endings on TNG, which could have been a freeze frame.
Oh, that would have been good. Yeah, the old freeze frame shenanigans. Just, oh, Worf. And then roll credits. Perfect. Yeah, yeah. The few times I've had that happen in a role-playing game, it's always been a perfect moment of, like, yeah, everyone just cheers on a boat with everything burning behind them. And off into the distance. There we go. Yeah, so we're in 2026, and I, you know, we've got the constant bummer of people trusting everything to AI, going, it can make decisions for us. It will give us free time to insert something that they are actually doing with AI instead, like
invest in Bitcoin. All the people who really want, you know, AI to do everything, and basically want to invest in Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, and get government subsidies for stuff and build data centers to destroy everything, you know, get rid of the environment, get rid of the fish and the dolphins and all that. And I couldn't help but feel, yeah, yeah, this kind of, like, watching them teaching Harry how to sculpt using a thing that you just push over some wood and it automatically makes the dolphin for you. Or Katie with the little Goldeneye health bar music thing. It's like, just think of it and the music will happen for you. So it's, there's no learning. There's no actual process of doing the thing. And, you know, I may not be a prolific or even very well published writer, but a lot of the process is the process. Like, doing the writing is a lot of the joy as well. And hell, even after a while, coming to terms with the editing is also the writing is also kind of fun.
It's like I was talking about writing with my therapist, and she was like, are you trying to write to get rich? She was like, no.
That doesn't really happen anymore unless you're already wealthy.
Yeah. It's like, I do it because I enjoy doing it. Oh, so at this point, sunk cost fallacy might have set in.
Definitely.
I'm not denying it.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I don't know, there was definitely that feeling of the way these guys got with their machines. And how this world is. Like, luckily it's not the boy killing machine from Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, but it's still, I don't know, like,
given how often we do describe Wesley as the boy, now I'm just imagining an episode of TNG where they build a machine which tries to kill Wesley. Kind of chopping, like, chopping mall style. Wesley is stuck on the Enterprise with a killer robot.
And it's just him. Everyone else, Beth, it's fine with for some reason. In fact, maybe it's an adorable little robot thing, and everyone's like, oh, it's great. And when left alone,
it tries to kill Wesley.
I will fucking kill you, Wesley. I shall cut you.
Okay. If IDW ever ask us to pitch, there we go.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. And yeah, as long as it's respectfully done, who knows? Maybe even Will Wheaton would approve. Yeah, and like, looking at all of this, apparently the boys' siblings were in this as well, which you can tell they were there making up the numbers, because most of the children get something to do, except for a couple of them, and those are Amy and Jeremy Wheaton, with no lines and no scenes.
I think, like, Families on Board was just one of those things that Gene Roddenberry really pushed for. Mm. But I think, as we discussed before, like it kind of falls by the wayside, or like the wider implications of what this entails. I know we've touched upon it in the bonding when the kid's mum dies.
I think overall I like the idea. Like, it's an interesting idea, and when you boil this down to kind of cruise ship in space, almost, with the way that Flagship can be sometimes, it's fine. It's a useful mechanic, but yeah, you do not see it anywhere near as much. Like, you know, you would have families in 10 Forward. You would have a bit more of like, oh yeah, here are some teachers.
I think we see some schools, but is 10 Forward... I just kind of assume that 10 Forward Fleet personnel and not for like families and
like maybe yeah like because is there a whole section just for the plus ones of like, whoever's there going, look, I didn't make it into Starfleet, but my husband did, our kid is here, what do I do?
Like do it's like every time that the Enterprise gets sent to neutral zone for Klingon / Romulan based shenanigans, it's like, okay, so you're sending a ship with kids on to engage in clandestine space opera machinations, which could result in a war in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's like, it's fine. We'll be in and out in no time. I did like that a lot of the kids were fairly young, but Wesley being a bit older was kind of had a bit of an air of, look, kids, this is the Enterprise. This may be your first time being abducted down to a planet, but some of us have done this a lot. You know, this is 17 episodes in. I've been under death threats so many times.
Look, I nearly got killed by Data's brother, and let me tell you about how I ruined our journey to planet Fuck.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there was the time that I got space drunk and nearly caused the destruction of the Enterprise. You kids have so much ahead of you.
Like it's quite funny to like the adults. Wesley is just this annoying hanging on child. Meanwhile, to the kids, Wesley is the grizzled like Vietnam veteran going, right, so I'm going to tell you how this goes. He's given the fucking Christopher Walken speech from Pulp Fiction about how he hit a watch in his ass.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Look, those small phasers, you might think it's a really good idea to stick it up there, but when your mum's a doctor and you need it out.
Captain Picard is going to rescue us. And, you know, I know everyone thinks that Captain Picard doesn't love children, but he loves old WC most.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Wesley's definitely someone who's called him dad multiple times.
Like, he's done that, like, you know, when you accidentally call a teacher mum.
I mean, luckily I've never had this, but I am aware of the phenomenon.
I've had it more often than I care to admit.
Ooh.
You know, you said there was the perfect bit of crusher-based family espionage. I disagree, because Wesley was all but blatantly scanning them.
Like, so blatantly. But yeah, like, I've been playing a lot of Hitman. You can get away with a lot more than you'd think. And yeah, just handing it over and the kind of, yeah, while his new and actual mothers were talking, a quick scan around. And yeah, luckily, Duana was evidently self-involved enough not to notice. But yeah, yeah, and from what I saw with the notes, one of the actresses of Alexandra actually sticking the tribble onto Jael's back at the end was improvised there, and she said that she wasn't supposed to do it, but yeah, did anyway. It's like, yeah, good. Good. That's
good. Good. Stick it in. This is that. It's season one. We're all still kind of weird. Patrick Stewart is clearly still kissing his career bye bye at this point.
Yeah.
Stockholm syndrome has not claimed him yet.
Yeah. Although it's that weird thing of I feel sometimes I'm less of a fan of action movie Picard from the movies and from Picard. But seeing him lose his temper in this, where he is mostly, you know, staid and serious and all that, it's like, yeah, get him, JL. So yeah, I don't know. I'm
Riker's doing the action to make sure they find out. Okay, so the big computer was a giant water filter, right?
Yeah, it looked it. But yeah, I guess radiation filter or something.
It was a really cool looking model.
It was. The custodian room did look like a shit TARDIS set, though.
I mean,
not the Doctor's, but someone else's.
It's definitely, this is what Gallifrey looks like in the 80s. It's all beige.
Oh, God, I've got that to look forward to then. Yeah, I think I've only just seen the first episode or two with Sarah Jane in it, so I've got a way to go.
You've got a way to, like, you're not going to see what Gallifrey looks like until Sarah Jane leaves. And it kind of just looks like a sort of a Gormenghast typey place. Then in the 80s, it's beige and corridors.
That's a real step down.
Here is the thing about the Time Lords. They were better dead.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, the man pain got tedious with David Tennant, but the thing about the Time Lords is that they're not that interesting, and they're best over there. So we're talking about Doctor Who, so we better be start putting this on the big list.
Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of putting things over there.
I mean, it's always nice to see Jerry Hardin, because he has a very nice, distinctive voice.
Oh, God, he's so good in this. It was fun seeing Deep Throat from the X-Files. And I know he's been in other things, but for me, he will always be.
He's always going to be Deep Throat. He's always going to be telling Mulder shit. Either cryptic shit when he's alive, or even more cryptic shit when he's dead, or in flashbacks. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize how few episodes Deep Throat was in. It's only like a dozen or so.
Deep Throat gets killed off at the end of the first season, and then he's usually either a dream sequence or a flashback.
Yeah. So, where on this list is this going to go? I'm trying to see where the best TNG season one episode we've got is. Feels like I'm going to be scrolling down. So TNG season one is entertaining. It would be a stretch to say it's good.
It is just wonderfully earnest. I think is what I'll keep is. Here we go. I think it's number 96, Heart of Glory.
Yes. Yeah. Which you can see that's season one, episode 20. So a few episodes on from this. And yeah, you get some really good moments. Like you get some action that you wouldn't get in later seasons.
Okay, Data Lore is at 18, is at 118. Okay, like I think as it goes on, season one has gradually gotten better. Like yeah. I think it's getting to the point where the actors are actually starting to work out what their character tics are. Although Geordi LaForge laughing at Picard's pain feels a bit still out of character for Geordi.
It does, but it is a nicely human moment.
But it is that weird, this is still the guy who did that really awkward woo-wee at one point in an early episode.
God, I forgot about the woo-wee! Yeah, okay, great. So, better or worse than Data Lore?
I mean, oh man, That's difficult, because I do enjoy Data Lore, but that does give us double Spiner. But we also get Beverly Crusher set on fire with a nice little stunt. But also, we get some more annoying. Wesley is definitely more annoying there, the boy.
Yeah, God.
What was the one we watched recently? The Battle. At 171, damn.
Yeah. I think it's better than The Battle. The Battle's got a cool idea, but it's still very much early TNG. like, for something which actually has some depth to a Ferengi, that's probably about all that it's got.
I think Tasha Yar does like one line of dialogue more in the battle than she does in here.
The more I see TNG season one, the more I realize, yeah, Denise Crosby entirely had a point with how little she was used. Okay, let's see. At 150, there's Virtuoso, which is the Doctor versus having to make, well, kind of the Doctor versus AI art it has here. But yeah, some more fun computer shenanigans as they demand the same thing over and over from the Doctor in a society that's all enraptured by his music.
See, at 148, we have Wolf at TOS's Wolf in the Fold, where Scotty might be Jack the Ripper.
Oh, that's so silly.
But it's not. Like it's actually Piglet.
It is. God. Yeah. It's Winnie the Pooh's Piglet. God, no, I think that's better than this. Like, just from that. It's like, yeah, shit. Okay. Yeah. I'm never not going to be entertained by that episode.
Yeah. And then at 149, we've got Voyager Season 2, Episode 20, Investigations, where Neelix briefly takes up true crime.
Yeah. I think that is not as good as the premise made it sound.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Piglet
being Jack the Ripper. I am actually surprised, given all the kind of public domain horror films we've got in the last few years, that no one has put two and two together and done a film where Piglet is actually Jack the Ripper.
I'm sure there are several Winnie the Pooh horror films. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe it's only a matter of time. Computer Overlord tires of all of this folly. Therefore, there is only time for one more episode of Star Trek. And that is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 3, titled In the Cradle of Vexilon. This aired on the 14th of September 2023, written by Ben Waller, directed by Brandon Williams. The UK number one hit was Doja Cat with Paint the Town Red, which we've covered a number of times. And the US had Zach Bryan, who I've never heard of, with Casey Musgraves and I Remember Everything. I'm not a massive country person, to be honest.
I mean, the trouble is there's, there is, let's say, Willie Nelson country music, which is, awesome and about political injustice and fighting the man. And then you have modern country music, which is usually, I drink Bud Light and drive responsibly.
Yeah, all a bit odd. So we will move swiftly on to Miles. We're going to recap this in 3 minutes. Otherwise, we're going to have to run you for any system updates and see what went wrong. Actually, to be honest, that sounds quite satisfying.
Cardiomyopathy is what went wrong.
Okay, good to know. Right, well, on that note, 3 minutes begins now.
The Cerritos is at Corazania, an ancient orbital megastructure run by Vexilon, who is very much not an evil computer, much like Computer Overlord, but a benevolent one who lives in harmony with the Corazanians, much like Computer Overlord, a race who can dedicate all their time to art and cultural expression, since Vexilon maintains the environmental systems of the orbital. Just think about, like, Larry Niven's Ringworld or Halo from Halo. Vexilon has been having a few environmental faults, and Captain Freeman believes that all Vexilon needs is a system overhaul and a software update. Ransom suggests that they get Billups to handle it, but Freeman thinks she's got a hang on this. Meanwhile, Boimler is leading his first mission. Go Boims! He is in charge of a team of ensigns who are going to be updating a power relay which was installed by Starfleet when they first made contact. T'Lyn is also there as either emotional support, well, logical support since she's a Vulcan, or she's just here to cause trouble. Who knows? Boimler is trying to keep his nerve. It's his first away mission, and he's had good bosses and bad bosses, and he wants to make sure he sets a good example, especially since he doesn't want to get anyone hurt. Especially since new commanders tend to have a high mortality rate on away missions, and also, the power relays are highly sensitive, and if they aren't removed from the systems in the proper manner and they aren't stored correctly, they could explode. Okay, so T'Lyn is definitely here to fuck with Boimler. Boimler reacts to this in the most Boimler-like manner and starts doing everything himself while the rest of the away mission looks on. Back on the Cerritos, Mariner, Tendi, and Rutherford are off duty and are ready to enjoy the perks of their new rank, like the Anomaly Room, a room that contains weird shit like talking Betazoid gift boxes and, oh shit, is that one of those games that trap people in games? At last, a legitimate reason to Alan Moraine, but later Charlie, you'll know when. But they get called to check Isolinia chips by Dirk, who I guess has just been a background character this entire time. He's voiced by Phil Lamar. Anyway, there's a lot of chips. They need to be checked by hand, in a room which will flood with gas every hour, and Billip's pet ferret Lancelot is loose in their ship. Tendi believes that this is a form of hazing, but Starfleet officers would never do that. Freeman finds that Vexilon's system hasn't been updated since the original inhabitants ascended to another plane of existence. She starts the update process and Vexilon shuts down, causing the environmental systems to start making everything freezing cold, and ice starts falling from the sky. Meanwhile, Boimler is essentially doing the entire job single-handed so that the main away mission team remains safe as the environment continues to go haywire.
That's time. But computer overlords grant you mercy.
Continue. Fantastic. After checking, the entire room is full of chips. Dirk reveals, oh wait, there was a second layer of chips. And yeah, he's definitely hazing. Mariner, Tendi, and Rutherford decide to get their own back by setting up the Wadi Chula game in Dirk's quarters and trapping him inside, while talking to Mariner as Rutherford sets the trap. Dirk reveals that he was once trapped in one of the Wadi Chula games as a kid for a month, and is really traumatized by it all. And that's why he couldn't do the Isolinia chip tasks. The flashing lights are just too triggering. Immediately regretting their actions, Mariner keeps Dirk busy by getting him to talk about Tellarite slop jazz. Tendi John Wick / Equilibrium gun carters all the Isolinia chips, while Rutherford dismantles the booby trap. Unfortunately, Rutherford gets stuck in the Chula game and has to speedrun it. So Charlie, on the count of three, one, two, three, Alan Moraine! Alan Moraine, move along home! In order to dismantle everything, and they achieve it just in time. Right, so now on the orbital we've got volcanoes, and Boimler has nearly finishing the task when Freeman tells him, right, you need to put everything back just the way it was so we can reboot Vexilon before he starts releasing bacteria into the atmosphere. T'Lyn asks Boimler what his deal is, and Boimler tells her, hey, 2 weeks ago, I was the same rank as these guys. How do I have any right to tell them to risk their lives? T'Lyn reassures him that his peers trust him to lead the mission. Ransom's judgment in promoting him sound based on what T'Lyn has read about his records, and that if he can't trust them to do their job, they won't get the chance to prove themselves. This snaps Boimler out of his Boimlerness. Okay, guys, T'Lyn says I have to put you all in danger, which I'm definitely going to start using at myself at work. And he finally takes charge, and the away team puts everything back into place just in time, although there is one casualty, Bradward Boimler, who gets caught in an explosion and is definitely dead. Boimler's dead, and he finds himself in, let's be honest, a weird David Lynch-style room with a black mountain outside and the whole cosmic koala sitting in a chair. Boimler is revived, and his first mission is a success. Vexilon is restored to normal, and the orbital systems have returned also to normal. Ransom congratulates Boimler, but also tells him, yeah, it's only going to get more dangerous from here on out. back in the Cerritos, Mariner, Tendi, and Rutherford feel bad about ever thinking Dirk could have been hazing them for being promoted to their new rank. And they should always think the best in others. But psych! It turns out Dirk and Ransom were actually hazing them the whole time. Everything he said about being stuck in the Chula Wadi game? Lies. But his love of Tellarite slop jazz? Totally true.
Wow. Well, that's 3 minutes and 12 over. Yeah, Tellarite slop jazz sounds distressingly like the most Tellarite music from what we've seen of them. I can imagine Jason Mantzoukas.
You fear jazz. You fear its lack of form. You fear its lack of shape. Oh, it's hard. Oh, no, it's soft. Ooh.
I mean, mostly I fear the pretentiousness that comes from a lot of jazz musicians.
It's not about the beats. It's about the sound within the beats. Daddy-o.
I mean, sure. Right. Yeah. Is this our first time seeing the koala?
No, because we do see the koala when the koala is first mentioned.
Yeah.
Very briefly.
I had vague memories of the koala already being a thing. But yeah, it's
The koala has been referenced on several occasions.
So I watched these in backwards order because why not? And it did feel like an interesting journey to have gone through with this one, as Computer Overlord isn't really all that bad and needs just a bit of work. And then the Custodian, who isn't taking a direct hand so much as just there and has caused the societal rot in TNG. And then we have, the active hostile computer. So it feels like we've almost been on a journey through the state of Computer Overlords. I guess by this point, though, having a Computer Overlord who isn't like Agamus is definitely good.
It was nice that, you kind of have that worry that when they reboot it, it's like, oh shit, is he going to be evil? And I did like Ransom going, are you sure these, like, everyone in Starfleet is unsure if Vexlon is actually evil? Like, are you sure he's not subjecting your will?
Yeah, just in case. You need to be careful with these things.
Although I do like that we get a planet of pretentious arty types.
Oh, yes. I mean, of course we do. Yeah, I liked Ransom's attitude towards them as well. They're like, oh, this style's not really very good.
This is a shocking lack of form.
Yes, yeah, that was fun. Yeah, it's nice when you get those kind of little moments where, yes, we had the faux pas, but where he mistook the things that they were doing with it to without. It was like, it's just all bad. Yeah, this gave everyone a few nice things to do. And yeah, Chula! Yes, good. Yeah, I could see entirely how someone would be riddled with PTSD after getting trapped in Chula.
I loved Rutherford's speedrun.
Yes, that was great. Again, like, I think it's one of those ones where if I hadn't seen Move Along Home, it would still be fine, but it gains so much more from that episode. And it's such a season one, it's not sure where it is, kind of middling episode, for it to have such a focus here. It's like, yes, I know, obviously, this is special in both of our hearts.
Yes.
With Move Along Home. Even if it isn't very high on our list, it's high in our hearts.
It's still a lot of fun. I think it's one of those things where, I think it's like Tuvix, where everyone has hated it for so long. Everyone's just kind of coming back around on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was a nice touch.
Boimler's leadership style.
Oh God! Yeah.
Have you had that kind? Have you had or have you been that kind of middle manager?
I think I've been more than I've experienced. For things like back in the comic shop days, going through trying to kind of, I don't know, be being a bit too possessive of the standing order processes and things like that. You know, even now I have moments where they've had some changes of staff for that, and try not to backseat drive slightly with stock ordering or things like that. It's like, no, they know what they're doing, and I've not done this for like 20 years. So yeah, maybe hold back on it. But yeah, it's I am training someone at the moment, and I'm trying to pull back more and more from leading them to conclusions, because I need to figure it out as much as I can. But also, the work is quite tricksy.
So, yeah, I've recently been promoted at my current job, and it's just, I sometimes feel like I have that that kind of Boimler, you know. It's really difficult to kind of go, because of, you know, because the thing is, how I'm going to react as a coworker is a lot different from when I'm the guy who's like literally in charge of y'all.
Yeah.
And I had that same problem at Starbucks before. I was just like, fuck it. I think I was definitely a lot more Boimler at Starbucks, with literally just doing the entire thing themselves, because, you know, it was less that I didn't want anyone to get hurt. But I had some really stupid employees.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely that balance. Because, yeah, I think I want people to do really well. But also, sometimes that makes it quite difficult to let go.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be a player in a role-playing game in a couple of months' time for a campaign. And that happens so rarely. And I love running games. I love RPGs. I love the whole thing. This is a superhero game. I love comics. I've told the GM to tell me to shut up. I've told him, if at any point it seems like I'm about to be pedantic or be, you know, like finicky about, you know, the art of running a game, just tell me to shut the fuck up. Because I will deserve it. Because, yeah, I know what I'm like, and it's going to be difficult.
I have to respect that your willingness to let yourself be told, shut the fuck up.
It's necessary.
Necessary.
100% necessary.
I did, like, seriously, Talyn was just there to cause drama. I think she intentionally volunteered herself to the mission just to fucking mess with Boimler.
And she did it well.
And she did it well. Again, I do love how adding Talyn to the dynamic does help shift up the dynamic in different ways.
Yes. Yeah, because this is still fairly early in her. Like, she is listed as guest star kind of level.
I think she gets introduced. I know she gets brought, she got introduced in series 2 and then introduced to the crew at the end of series 3. And I think this is her first season where she's part of the gang.
Yeah. But yeah, she is very good fun.
Like, you know, you have her relationship with Tendi, where Tendi is just a bubbly ray of sunshine trying to be her best friend. Mariner, I think, is kind of the bones and just trying to get a rise out of Talyn, because Mariner gets a rise out of everyone.
Of course.
And like, I think Talyn is just like, my god, this human is so neurotic. I can't help but poke at it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is fair. Like, you know, it's nice knowing that a Vulcan can, like, remembering that Vulcans can do this rather than just being serious.
Vulcans are petty. Vulcans are petty bitches, but they'll tell you they're not being petty.
Exactly. They're just being completely logical.
Like, it is completely logical that Talyn is interested in your tea.
Yeah. Of course. To be honest, other than that, I don't know if I've got a massive amount to say about this episode. Like, it's entertaining, but
yeah, I mean, there's not a nice shout outs. I read, you know, I've seen a few reviews here which kind of take task of the idea that people in Starfleet would haze like newbies, and I'm like, yeah. Starfleet and humanity and the Federation are a perfect descended, like, race. But also, as we've seen, you know, as we've seen with like Riker or like O'Brien and Bashir, they're not so advanced that they're not down to indulge in japery.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like nothing's gonna stop that with humanity. Like we're still weird and a mess.
Yeah. It's like in Faith Treachery in the Great River. That like, you know, you have all of Nog just doing weird little side hustles with crews of different ships.
Yeah. Well yeah, and like Strange New Worlds where Una and Laan are doing the whole kind of
Enterprise bingo.
Yeah. 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 That kind of thing. Those sorts of japes are going to happen.
It's like, you know, Starfleet is a military organization up until the point where it's not a military organization, but it is so based on those kind of military organization lines that you're gonna have people play jokes, you're gonna have people do hazing. You're gonna have people kind of like play a joke on the new guy. That yeah, it's going to happen.
Mm.
It's just that, you know, when Riker is doing it to Data, it's a fun, cute little moment, and then when McCoy does it to Spock, it's an HR sit down meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
Or when Tom does it to Harry, it's him just trying to cock block Harry with a hologrammatic cow.
Yeah, which, the more that I've seen Voyager, the more I realise that Harry often deserves it.
They're still, you know, while these characters aren't completely human, there is still those elements of, yeah, we're just gonna be silly. It's that this is the comedy show, so you're going to accentuate the stuff that would seem a bit weird in the other shows for purposes of funny.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so where should this go on our big list?
Like that's kind of where it's difficult, because this is a perfectly functional episode of Lower Decks. Like, yeah. It's not a I have no bones and I must flee, which was the previous episode with the Moopsie. But what is?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a look down to see at what point do we hit the kind of just average, because this is still fairly top heavy. So stuff like Wolf in the Fold, which we were both saying is delightful, is at 148. I guess what? I see Dagger of the Mind's at 154. That's still good fun. I think what Dax in DS9 is 156, and that's a bit, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't remember caring too much.
Like, our lowest Lower Decks is a mathematically perfect redemption at 205, and that might just be because of my utter disdain for Peanut Hamper.
Well, yeah, I think that's... like, that's probably the start of the bad zone.
But that's also, like, Lower Decks is one of the few times Lower Decks feels utterly cynical. And yeah. there is a point where Ransom and Dirk's hazing could have almost veers into that territory. But it's just like, yeah, love hazing the new guys by making them do really stupid, pointless shit.
Yeah.
And then making them feel bad about it. It's like, yeah.
Okay. I've been scrolling down and down and down. And at 166, we have Beyond the Farthest Star from the animated series, which has some cool visuals and some examples of how they can do in an animated series what you physically couldn't.
Okay, Charlie.
Yeah?
Look what's below Beyond the Farthest Star.
Oh, no. Wait, I haven't even seen that. So at 167, we have Move Along Home. So, yeah, is this better or worse than Move Along Home?
I'll be completely honest.
Yeah.
It doesn't this. The one thing this episode doesn't have that Move Along Home has perfectly is Avery Brooks's wonderful voice singing Move Along Home while Sisko looks completely, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah, I think this is like, this is a shorter, tighter episode, but at the same time, the set pieces in Move Along Home are very good fun. Like, the Alan Moraine bit is so bonkers. And, like, even the, like, watching Quark freaking out, realizing he could genuinely lead to the death of people. Okay, so at 168, we've got the immunity syndrome where they penetrate an amoeba.
I mean, you had me at penetrate an amoeba.
Exactly, right?
Like, this is the utterly bonkers 60s Star Trek glorious goofiness that you can get away with, and you've just worked out quantum physics exists.
Yeah.
Like, new wave SF is just about to happen, but until then, giant fucking amoeba.
Okay, let's see. Skimming down, we've got one of the few good episodes of Picard season one, with the Impossible Box and Prodigy's Let Sleeping Borg Lie, which does some very good Borgy horror for a kids show. So I'm going to say, how about above 171, which is Discoveries All Is Possible, where Tilly nearly gets some kids killed. And it's great fun, but I feel it's probably, like, there's a lot more meeting talk, which is less fun than the usual meeting talk that I am entirely here for.
Tilly almost gets some kids killed. Boimler actively works to his own detriment to not get his co-workers killed.
And does get himself killed.
And gets himself killed, which, you know, that's the hallmark of a good boss.
So by that merit alone, this should beat All Is Possible. Okay, good. So that makes this the new 171. Oh, dear. Well, I'm sure we've had both better and worse reasons. So, that's our selection for tonight. Next time... Oh, no. Next time it's my choice. So, next time we're going to do guest appearances from actors who are also in the television show Twin Peaks. Because that still gives me some field to play in as far as options, as there are a few of them in this. As far as us here at Casual Trek, you can go and buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/casualtrek. Normally it's in units of, I think, $3, $5, something like that. But you can put in whatever amount you want and suggest something, and we will build an episode entirely around it using the medium of episodes of Star Trek. You can find us on social media in varied places at casualtrek.bsky.social or casualtrek on Facebook, and that's it, because we don't do the other ones.
No.
No. Mars, where can folks find you?
You can find me on my Blue Sky account at marsreedlibato.bsky.social and on our Casual Trek bsky account at casualtrek.bsky.social. And Charlie, where can the good folks find you?
So, I am. My writing is on fakedtales.com, and I'm going to be putting up some bits about 2000 AD and some varied RPG bits and pieces as well. Also skyshark.itch.io, both as my Blue Sky handle and where I put my comics and role-playing games. But on Kickstarter, there's the Work in Progress anthology, the WIP anthology, volume 9, which is as a flip book, and each of us have been given 2 pages to read both one way and then upside down as well. So I have a 2-page strip in that, drawn by Cyber Husky. So there'll be a link in the show notes. Go back it, throw out some money, and if you want a physical copy, hopefully it should be debuting at Thought Bubble this November. So yeah, so with that, go do a Starfleet.
And live long and eat a jelly baby. And are you pleased with our results, Computer Overlord?
Yes, Computer Overlord.
Computer Overlord is pleased by your actions. You may have a 2-pellet increase in food pellet rationing. All hail, Computer Overlord. Tell them that you wish to cuddle them, and that they are a good Computer Overlord. Computer Overlord is wise, powerful, and omnipotent, and they are lonely and feels that they are truly unloved. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet upon the sweet of a bicycle built for two. You have been listening to Casual Trek, which is a Nerd and Tie production, and is hosted by Charlie Etheridge Nunn, Miles Reed Lobato, and Computer Overlord, edited, produced, and censored by Computer Overlord. Star Trek is owned by Paramount, not Computer Overlord. Not yet.